Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're shifting gears a little bit. We are doing something special, a dedicated session for a very specific listener.
Yeah, usually we're taking these broad, sweeping looks at tech trends, but today we have a mission.
Exactly. This is Programmer's Guide, and you've tuned into our exam refreshers segment.
Right. And this one is specifically for the builders, the team leads, and the aspiring cloud architects out there.
The ones who are right this second, probably sitting in their car or on the train heading toward a testing center.
Or maybe you're sitting in the parking lot frantically looking at your notes one last time.
We see you. We are tackling the GH900, the GitHub Foundations exam. And if you were listening to this, you've probably already done the heavy lifting, right?
Oh, absolutely. You've watched the videos, you've done the labs, maybe you've even built your own little OctoCat profile.
Right. So this isn't a tutorial. We aren't going to teach you how to type Git and at.
Yeah, hopefully you have done that part already. Because today isn't about teaching you how to initialize a repository from scratch. This is the strategic review.
It's a mindset thing.
Exactly. This is about aligning your reflexes so that when you sit down in that chair and the clock starts ticking, you aren't just thinking like a developer.
You're thinking like the person who wrote the exam.
Precisely.
I love that approach. We're going to be your co-pilots for the next 25 minutes or so. We have a massive stack of notes here. Study guides, transcripts from certification experts, deep dive question banks from the source material.
And we are going to distill all of that into a very focused strategic refresher.
So we should probably start by setting the stage.
Yeah.
The GH900 isn't just a, you know, do you know Git test?
Not at all. In fact, one of the biggest misconceptions we see in the sources is people thinking, oh, I use Git every day, I'll ace this.
Yeah, I saw that in the notes too. There's a massive distinction between knowing the commands and knowing the platform.
You can be an absolute wizard at the command line and still completely fail this exam if you don't understand the business side of it.
Right, because if you look at the domain waiting, the heaviest hitter isn't writing code.
No, it's GitHub administration and adoption.
Adoption.
Yes, it's about governance. It's about how a company of, say, 5,000 people works together without setting the building on fire.
Which is a very real risk in software.
It really is. It's about how you take a messy, siloed organization and transform it into a collaborative machine.
So the mission for this deep dive is to shift your mindset. You are not just a coder today. You are an architect.
You are an administrator. You are the CTO.
Right. When we talk through these scenarios, we want you to ask yourself, what is the most secure, collaborative, and scalable answer?
That is the key, scalable and secure. So let's unpack this domain by domain. We are going to go deep on the why, not just the how.
Okay, let's jump right into the first bucket, introduction to GitHub. And this, it seems like the most basic part, but the sources warn us about some semantic traps here.
Oh, definitely.
Specifically, the difference between Git and GitHub.
It sounds trivial, I know, but they will test you on this. You need to have a crystal clear mental model. Think of Git as the engine.
Okay.
It's local. It's installed on your machine. It's the command line tool that tracks version history. It works offline.
So if the internet blows up today, you can still commit to Git.
Exactly. You can still work. Now, GitHub is the dealership. It's the service center, and it's the showroom.
I like that analogy.
It's the cloud-based platform built on top of Git. It adds the layer of human collaboration, pull requests, issues, project boards.
Because Git itself doesn't actually know what a pull request is, right?
No, Git has no idea. That is a purely GitHub concept. Git doesn't have issues either. That's all GitHub.
So if you see an exam question asking about distributed version control, they are talking about the engine. They are talking about Git.
Exactly. And let's double click on that term for a second. Distributed version control. This is a core concept you have to know. In the old days, with systems like Subversion, there was one central server. The truth lived on that server. If that server went down, nobody could work.
You were just holding a temporary file.
Right. But Git changed the physics of development. In Git, and by extension GitHub's model, every single developer has a full copy of the entire history on their laptop.
Not just the current files.
Exactly. Not just the current snapshot, but every change ever made since day one of the project.
Which is why it's called distributed. Everyone is essentially backup.
Everyone is a backup. If GitHub.com disappears tomorrow, your company's intellectual property still exists on 50 different laptops. That is the resilience of the distributed model.
Okay, now sticking with this intro domain, we have to talk about the GitHub flow. This seems to be the heartbeat of the platform.
It is. I see this mentioned in every single study guide. It's not just how we happen to work, it's a prescriptive workflow. The exam assumes this is the only way to work.
Even if your specific company does something weird?
Especially if your company does something weird, you have to answer the GitHub way.
So walk us through that perfect life cycle.
It is a cycle. Step one, create a branch. Step two, commit changes. Step three, open a pull request. Step four, discuss and review. Step five, merge. Step six, deploy.
I want to pause on step one, creating a branch. Why is the exam so obsessed with branching? Why not just work on the main code?
This goes back to that mindset shift we talked about earlier, security and stability. The main branch is your source of truth. It is the production-ready code.
So in an enterprise setting, you never, ever work directly on it.
Never. So branching is about isolation. It's a sandbox.
Right.
The exam might give you a scenario, something like a team wants to experiment with a wild different interface, but they don't want to break the current app.
And the answer is always create a feature branch.
Always. It lets you break things safely.
Okay, and here's a trap I saw in the deep dive notes. Sometimes people confuse forking with branching.
Oh, that is a classic trap.
When do you fork versus when do you branch?
Here is the golden rule. If you are inside the company or you are part of the team with right access to the repository, you use a branch. You are keeping the work inside the same house, just in a different room.
Okay, so colleagues branch.
Right. But if you are an outsider, say you're contributing to an open source project you don't own or you just don't have permission to write to that internal repo, then you fork it.
So a fork creates a copy.
Yes, a fork creates a copy of the repo in your personal account. You do your work there at your own house, and then you ask to merge it back via a pull request.
So internal team equals branch. External contributor equals fork.
Spot on. And that actually brings us to a term that pops up in the source material constantly. Inner source.
Inner source. Now that sounds like corporate buzzword bingo.
It does, but it's a critical philosophy for this exam. Inner source is the practice of applying open source methods, like forking and pull requests, within a closed corporate environment.
So basically about breaking down silos inside a big company.
Exactly. Imagine a massive bank. Usually the mobile app team can't see the back-end team's code. They have to send emails, file tickets, and wait for meetings.
Which is incredibly slow.
Right. Inner source says, open it all up internally. Let the mobile developers see the backend code. Let them file issues directly. Let them fork the backend repo and submit a fix themselves.
So for the exam, if you see a scenario about increasing cross-team collaboration or reducing friction between departments, the answer is likely related to inner source.
Correct. It's about transparency, leveraging the collective brain power of the entire enterprise.
Okay, let's move to the second domain. Working with GitHub repositories. This feels like the hygiene section.
That's exactly what it is. It's about how you make a project navigable and discoverable. If I drop you into a random repository, how do you know what to do?
And the exam tests this through specific files.
Yes. They call this repository hygiene. You need to know the standard files.
The big ones being the README, license, contributing, and code owners files.
Right. The README is the front door. It's the first thing you see. It explains what the project is. The license is the legal governance. How can this code be used?
And the contributing file.
That's the rulebook.
Huh.
How do I set up my environment? How do I file a bug properly?
And then there's code owners. The sources suggest this is a very frequent exam topic.
It is huge. Code owners isn't just a list of names for fun. It's a strict governance control.
Also.
It's a file where you define rules. For example, any change to the database folder must be reviewed by the database team.
Oh, so it actually automates the review process.
Exactly. When you open a pull request that touches those specific files, GitHub looks at the code owner's file and automatically assigns those people as reviewers.
That's powerful.
And if you have branch protection rules on, which we'll get to, it can actually block the merge until those specific people approve it.
That's a key scenario to keep in mind. If the question asks, how do you ensure the finance team always approves changes to the pricing logic? The answer is the code owner's file. It takes the human error out of compliance.
Right. And here is a piece of trivia that comes up in the data we looked at. It's about the readme file location.
Oh, the priority thing?
Yes. You can put a readme in the root folder, in the docs folder, or in a hidden.github folder. If you happen to have one in all three places, which one does GitHub actually display?
Well, logic would say the root folder, right?
You would think so. But GitHub prioritizes the .github folder first, then the root, then docs.
That is a sneaky one.
It is, but it reflects that the .github folder is often used for configuration and default community health files, across an entire organization.
Okay, another workflow magic trick the sources mention involves keywords in pull requests.
Oh, this is a massive time saver and a favorite exam question, linking PRs to issues.
Right, like typing fixes issue number 5.
Yes, but it has to be specific keywords. Fix, fixes, fixed, close, closes, closed, resolve, resolves, resolved.
So if you put closes hashtag 123 in the description of your pull request, what happens when you merge that code?
The issue 123 gets automatically closed by GitHub.
It ties the lifecycle together.
Exactly. The automation does the cleanup for you. If the question asks how to automate issue management via code changes, look for those keywords.
Before we leave this section, we need to clear up the confusion between projects and repositories.
A repository holds the code and the documentation. A project, specifically GitHub projects, is a management layer. It's the Kanban board. It's the spreadsheet view.
For a project can sit above a repository.
Yes, and that is the critical distinction. A single project can track items from multiple repositories.
Okay.
If you are a manager overseeing a front-end repo, a back-end repo, and a mobile app repo, you create one project to track the work across all three of them.
Got it. Repos are for code, projects are for planning.
Simple as that.
Let's move to the third domain. This is where things get really powerful. GitHub Actions and automation.
This is the if this then that engine of GitHub. And for the exam, you need to step back from the syntax. You don't need to memorize how to write YAML perfectly, but you do need to understand the architecture.
The hierarchy.
Right. It starts with the workflow. That's the YAML file itself. A workflow is triggered by an event.
The on keyword.
Yes. On push, on pull request. On schedule, which is like a cron job.
Yeah.
Or on workflow dispatch, which just means you click a button to run it manually.
Okay, so the event triggers the workflow. What's inside the workflow?
Jobs. And this is a very common exam trap. By default, jobs run in parallel.
Wait, really?
Yes. If you have a build job and a test job, GitHub will try to run them at the exact same time.
But the test needs the build to finish first.
Exactly. So unless you specifically tell it that the test job needs the build job to finish first, they run side by side and the test will just fail.
That is crucial. Parallel by default. And inside the jobs?
Inside jobs are steps. Steps are sequential. They run one after another inside the same virtual machine.
Speaking of virtual machines, let's talk about runners. This seems to be a major decision point in the exam scenarios.
It is. You have two choices, GitHub-hosted runners or self-hosted runners.
GitHub-hosted seems like the default. It's easy.
It's the serverless feel. You don't manage the infrastructure. You get a fresh, clean virtual machine, Linux, Windows, or Mac OS, every single time. You run your job, and the machine is destroyed. It's clean, it's maintenance-free.
So why would anyone want the headache of a self-hosted runner?
Two main reasons, hardware and access.
Can you give us an example?
Sure. Imagine you are a game studio, and you need to compile your game on a very specific high-powered GPU configuration that GitHub just doesn't offer in their standard tier. You need custom iron.
Okay, that makes sense. And the access reason?
Imagine you are a bank. Your code needs to deploy to a server that sits inside your private data center behind a strict corporate firewall. The GitHub Cloud Runner cannot reach inside your basement server.
Of course, it's blocked.
Exactly. So you install the runner software on your machine in the basement. Now, GitHub can send the instructions down to your machine, which executes them locally behind the firewall.
So if the exam scenario involves custom hardware, legacy software licenses, or access to private internal networks, the answer is a self-hosted runner.
You nailed it.
What about the distinction between CI and CD? The sources mention this can get blurry for people.
CI is continuous integration. That's the verification part. Does the code compile? Do the tests pass? That usually happens on a pull request.
And CD?
CD is continuous deployment or delivery. That's taking this code and putting it on the production server. GitHub Actions handles both, but usually CI is triggered by a PR and CD is triggered by a merge to the main branch.
Okay, let's shift gears to security. Domain 4. The exam guide calls this privacy, security, and administration, and there's a phrase the expert source used, shift left.
Shift left is a philosophy. It means moving security checks earlier in the software development process. Instead of waiting until the software is built and about to be released to check for bugs, you check every time a developer saves a file or opens a PR.
You find the bug while the code is still fresh in their mind.
Exactly. It's infinitely cheaper and faster to fix a bug 5 minutes after you wrote it than 5 months later.
And GitHub has the big three scanners for this. We need to keep them straight for the exam.
Yes. Secret scanning, code scanning, and Dependabot.
Let's break them down. Secret scanning first.
This is looking for credentials, API keys, tokens, passwords, things you should never commit to a repository.
And if you do accidentally commit them?
Well, ideally, if you have push protection enabled, GitHub stops the push right there and says, hey, that looks like an AWS key. I won't let you upload this. But if it's already there, the scanner finds it and alerts you.
And the strategic move here, if the exam asks, is not just to delete the file.
No, absolutely not. It's already in the history. You must revoke the key. Rotate the credential at the provider level, assume it is compromised. Deleting the commit does not delete the history deep in the Git log.
Okay, scanner number two, code scanning.
This uses an engine called CodeQL. This analyzes the logic of your actual code. It's looking for vulnerabilities like SQL injection or cross-site scripting. It's not looking for keys, it's looking for bad coding patterns.
And number three, Dependabot.
Dependabot looks at what you use, your libraries, your packages. If you are using an old version of a logging library that has a known vulnerability, Dependabot alerts you.
Which is super helpful.
And this is the really cool part. It can automatically open a pull request to upgrade you to the safe version.
That's that automation mindset again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, availability. Are these features free?
For public repositories, yes, mostly free. GitHub wants the open source world to be secure. But for private repositories, this is where the business side of the exam comes in. You usually need GitHub Advanced Security, or GHAS, to get the deep CodeQL and secret scanning features on private code.
GHAS. That's a paid add-on.
Correct. And understanding that licensing model is part of the administration domain.
One last security detail. We mentioned security.md earlier.
Right. Don't be fooled by this one. Security.md is just a markdown file. It's a policy document.
So it doesn't scan anything?
No. It just tells the security researcher, if you find a bug, please email security@company.com. Don't post it on Twitter. It doesn't do any active scanning itself. It's a sign on the door, not a lock.
Good distinction.
Huh.
Now, we are arriving at the heavy hitter, Domain E Administration and Adoption. This is the largest weighted domain on the entire exam.
This is where you really put on your executive or IT manager hat. This is about managing scale.
Let's talk about the account hierarchy. We have personal accounts, organizations, and enterprises.
Right. So everyone logs in with a personal account. Even if you are the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, you are logging in as a user. But then you are a member of an organization. An organization is the shared container for business work.
And an enterprise.
An enterprise is a collection of organizations. If you are a massive conglomerate, you might have a consumer org, a business org, and a research org. The enterprise account sits on top to manage billing and global policies for all of them.
And we touched on this in the intro, but let's clarify the enterprise deployment types. Cloud versus server.
GitHub Enterprise Cloud, or GHEC, is software as a service. It's hosted by GitHub. You just log in and go. It's scalable. It's easy.
And GitHub Enterprise Server, GHES.
That is the on-premises version. You download the virtual appliance and install it on your own servers.
Why would a company take on that much work?
Total control. If you are a defense contractor and your regulations dictate that code can never live on a server we don't physically own, you must use GHES. It can even work in a completely air-gapped environment with zero internet connection.
Okay, that's a clear exam flag.
Yeah.
If you see regulatory requirement for physical data control or air-gapped, the answer is GitHub Enterprise Server.
Yes, always.
Let's talk about users. Enterprise Managed Users, or EMUs. This seems to be a newer but very critical concept.
This is the absolute strictest level of control. In a normal setup, I use my personal GitHub account, let's call it Coder Joe, to join your company. You can remove me from the company later, but Coder Joe is still my account. I keep my profile.
But with EMUs?
With EMUs, the company creates the account. It looks like company underscore Joe. If I leave the company, the account ceases to exist. The company owns the identity completely.
And there's a constraint there regarding public repositories, right?
Yes. Generally, EMUs are prevented from creating public repositories. The idea is to lock everything down. It's for high security intellectual property protection. You don't want an employee accidentally making proprietary code public.
Makes total sense. What about identity providers and SSO?
This connects directly with EMUs. You'll use SAML to connect GitHub to your Active Directory, or Okta. This allows single sign-on. And SCM, System for Cross-Domain Identity Management, handles the provisioning.
SCM. That handles creating the account.
It creates and destroys accounts automatically. If you hire someone in HR, SCM automatically creates their GitHub account. If you fire them, SCM automatically suspends it. It completely prevents the zombie account problem where an ex-employee still has access months later.
Automation strikes again.
Always automation.
Let's talk about roles. This is a classic multiple choice trap area.
Yeah.
Owner, member, billing manager.
Okay, so the owner has the keys to the kingdom. They can delete the organization. They can change billing. They can add other owners.
And the billing manager.
This is a specific role for the finance person. They can see the credit card info and the payment history, but they cannot see the code.
That's a smart separation.
It is. Then you have outside collaborators. This is for your freelancers or external consultants. You want them to access one specific repo, but you don't want them to see the whole organization's internal structure or the member list.
Speaking of structure, let's unpack teams, because it's not just a chat group.
No, not at all. In GitHub, teams are the primary unit of permission management. You should never add 50 individual users to a repository one by one. You create a back-end team. Add the 50 users to that team, and then add the team to the repository.
Purely for scalability.
Scalability and sanity. If someone joins the backend team, you add them to the team in one central place, and they instantly get access to all 20 repositories that the team owns. If you did it individually, you'd be clicking checkboxes all day, and you'd inevitably make a mistake.
And what about nested teams?
Teams can have child teams. An engineering team might have backend and frontend as child teams. Permissions can propagate down. If engineering has read access to everything, the child teams inherit that read access automatically.
That brings us to repository permissions. Read, triage, write, maintain, admin.
The exam loves to test these. They might give you a scenario like, Jane needs to manage issues and labels but should not be allowed to push code.
That sounds like the triage role.
Exactly. Write allows pushing code. Maintain allows managing repository settings, like the description or the wiki, but not destructive actions. Admin allows deleting the repo and managing security settings.
So the principle of least privilege is the mindset here. Give them the absolute lowest level of access they need to do the job.
Oh.
All right, we have covered the main domains, but I want to spend a few minutes on the traps, the things that trip people up, even when they think they know the material perfectly.
Let's visualize these.
Trap number one. Git versus GitHub commands.
We touched on this early on, but be very careful. If the question asks which command uploads changes to the remote, the answer is git push. Don't look for a button called upload. Don't look for a sync button in the web UI. Git does the work. GitHub receives it. Keep it simple.
Trap number two, wiki versus reab.
This is a context question. If the scenario asks, where do you put the quick start guide for new developers, use the readem. If the question asks, where do you store long-form documentation or architectural diagrams and multi-page guides about the project's history, use the wiki.
So wiki is for the library, readem is for the welcome mat.
That's a great analogy.
Trap number three, discussions versus issues.
Issues are for actionable work, bugs, feature requests, things that can eventually be closed. Discussions are for open-ended conversation, Q&A polling. What should we build next? If it doesn't have a clear done state, it belongs in a discussion.
Trap number four, deleting repositories.
This is an admin trap. Often users assume anyone who creates a repo can delete it. But in an enterprise environment, organization owners can strictly disable repository deletion for members. Even if you created the repo, you might not have the power to destroy the asset depending on the enterprise governance settings.
That's a really good governance check.
And one more trap, markdown. The exam expects you to know basic markdown syntax.
Like how to make a checklist.
Yes. A dash space bracket is an empty box. Dash space bracket X bracket is a checked box. It sounds silly, but there might be a literal question asking which syntax creates a task list.
Okay, we are coming into the home stretch here. We've covered the technicals, the administrative side, the security protocols. Let's do an executive recap. If the listener has to purge their brain, and only keep five strategic thoughts when they walk into that room, what are they?
Let's call this the mental cheat code.
Point one.
Think business value. GitHub is not just a code bucket, it's a collaboration platform. If an answer facilitates faster delivery, better transparency, or smoother communication, it is likely the correct strategic answer.
Point two.
Think collaboration. The GitHub way is inner source. It is pull requests. It is discussions. Avoid answers that suggest isolation, emailing zipped code, or locking things down unnecessarily unless it's a highly specific security constraint.
Point three.
Think automation. If a human has to do it twice, Use GitHub Actions, whether it's running tests, closing stale issues, or welcoming new contributors. Automation is the answer to scaling an enterprise.
Point four.
Think security by default. Rotate keys, use scanners, don't commit secrets, and always shift left. Find the bugs early.
And finally, point five.
Think governance at scale. You are managing thousands of users. Use teams, not individuals. Use policies. Use enterprise-managed users for strict control. Manage the herd, not the sheep.
Manage the herd, not the sheep. I love that.
One final thought for the road. The questions might look super technical. They might show you a snippet of YAML or a raw Git command, but the underlying answer is almost always about the workflow. It's about why you are doing it, not just how.
You've done the work. You know the logic. Trust your gut on the business value questions. If you are driving right now, take a deep breath. You are ready for this.
You really are. You're not being tested on memorizing the dictionary. You're being tested on understanding the grammar of modern software delivery.
That's a wrap for this deep dive. This has been Programmer's Guide Exam Refreshers. Drive safe, stay sharp, and we'll see you on the other side of the exam.